This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 19th at 10:36 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, we will stop calling something a ceasefire if the two sides continue to shoot at each other. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who have very busy schedules that always have conflicts that prevent them from appearing at controversial events. I wonder which event I'm referring to. Stay tuned. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, those no-shows, or some no-shows, get our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, the big story. It was quite the day in New Albany, just outside of Columbus. The state's richest man, one of the state's most powerful men, was questioned under oath about his relationship with convicted pedophile and alleged sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. We could not see it, but we assume Les Wexner raised his right hand and swore to tell the truth about his longtime friend and business manager. The proceedings were private, at least for now, so we don't know exactly what was asked and answered. As the proceedings began, Wexner released a long statement where he said he and Epstein were friends and Epstein managed all of his personal finances, but he had no idea of Epstein's illegal activities. Wexner said in his statement, quote, "I was naive, foolish, and gullible to put any trust in Jeffrey Epstein. He was a con man, and while I was conned, I have done nothing wrong and have nothing to hide," unquote. Committee member Dave Min of California was not buying it.
He has basically alleged that he saw no evil, heard no evil, despite being in the room with Jeffrey Epstein over and over and over, and it's really just not credible.
The top Democrat on the committee, Robert Garcia of California, said the panel has more questions for Wexner, and he said Ohioans should as well.
I think this community should also be asking questions. This community deserves to know why the most powerful man and one of the richest men, if not the richest man in Ohio, gave so much of his wealth to the largest modern sex trafficking ring in American history.
Closely watching the news surrounding the deposition is Ohio State University and its president, Ted Carter. Carter said last week university officials are considering all the facts and they have a process to consider the more than two dozen requests they have received to remove Wexner's name from the OSU Medical Center, the Art Center on OSU's campus, and also the football complex, which bears Les Wexner's name. For more on this topic, we turn to our panel of Statehouse insiders, reporter Jake Zuckerman of Signal Statewide, as well as Democratic strategist Brian Rothenberg and Republican strategist Mark Weaver.
Mark, the fact that there's even the possibility of Ohio State University removing Les Wexner's name from its buildings is extraordinary.
It is, although I really respect the way President Carter said that there has to be a process. It can't be how many emails or tweets have we gotten about this. There needs to be a process because it's easy to make an allegation. I mean, as a part-time prosecutor, I live in a world of proof. I have to prove things. So it's easy for people to send an email saying, I don't like this, you should take his name down. So let's remain calm, do a process.
Brian, but other organizations have not been, they've been more quick to disassociate employees who are tied to Epstein?
Well, I think first of all, given what's going on nationally, it's become a big issue to do that. But Ohio State also has kind of a tragic history when it comes to this. I mean, the Blackwell Business School is named after someone that went to prison, and they never removed the name there. There are other people that have donated things that have had major lawsuits against them that went against them. So it's interesting that he did say that there will be a process, because there hasn't been a fair process and an even process. I would also say that he is alleged, until we know for sure, there could be some legal issues that they have to deal with as well, as you know.
Even legal allegations right now. It's social media buzz.
Right. So I think there has to be a process for President Carter. I thought what was really interesting about his comments, which maybe we'll get into in a bit, is he kind of threw Gordon Gee under the bus.
Jake, Gordon Gee, a couple of weeks ago on the same show, same All Sides show, said that Les Wexner was a victim of cancel culture, and he stood by him. He had actually talked to him that morning from Florida, and he just thinks this is really much ado about nothing, and they should move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting. He said a process, but I'm not sure what process he's referring to. I mean, so much of the Jeffrey Epstein case is really about that process failing. There was evidence that Jeffrey Epstein committed more crimes than he was charged with, and Alex Acosta, as a young prosecutor, did not pursue that line of evidence. The government seemed to at some point consider Les Wexner a co-conspirator. Did they rule that out and hence he wasn't charged, or did the case just not advance? So I guess I'm curious what that, I mean, it's true, he is innocent until he's proven guilty, but does OSU plan to hire a law firm perhaps to investigate and get to the bottom for itself of is this person a guilty person, or is it just if he gets indicted, then we will remove his buildings, and if, I don't know, say a statute of limitations has passed, then we keep it up?
Yeah, I think this process he talks about was launched in 2021, 22, when a lot of, after the George Floyd murder, a lot of names who were associated with racial past or racist right. past were considered to be removed from buildings. I think the Thompson Library was the first thing that they've looked at over the past few years.
You know, the other thing interesting about the co-conspirator term, when they start throwing that out, even in an alleged fashion, is that it's most often used in the case of a RICO case.
It's a legal term. When you bring an indictment for somebody who's committed a crime, you can say that somebody conspired with them to commit a crime. It's a pretty low bar to bring an indictment. It's probable cause. Even harder to convict them. You know what? Here's a new rule. This is Mark's new rule. Let's not name things after people until they're dead.
That would be the easiest way to do it.
In my hometown of Philadelphia, half of Temple was named after Bill Cosby, and then that had to be taken down.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that Les Wexner and Bill Cosby have anything in common other than they're both alive. So allow people to die before we put their names on things and give a little reflection about whether they should have things.
I like that. We can take the president's name off of the president's name can come off the Kennedy Center now.
Well, it would make it, but the bottom line is he gave a lot of money. He was, I mean,
why this happens. I get it. No, I know why it happens.
And I mean, he was, his business career, he went from a small shop in Upper Arlington to this retail empire. His business story is incredible. He's been a generous person.
I have no quarrel with that. I
wouldn't either.
But you can see why his name is on the building.
I actually think he's been one of the most maleficent benefactors of many wealthy people across the country, and you can't take that away from him. This is just a huge stain on everything he's ever done.
What do politicians do? They're already making some noise that politicians who have accepted campaign donations from Les Wexner, John Husted has, Joyce Beatty also has gotten a lot of campaign donations from Les Wexner. This is going to become an issue in the campaign.
You can't give it back, so you have to donate it to some.
Yeah. Well, I've advised a lot of politicians in that exact situation. My view is, did the money come because that person believes in what the politician did, or is the politician doing something because of the money? The latter is improper and should be done about. The former is typical. Anybody who wants to donate for member of Congress Smith because that person believes in a stronger military, those donations are fine, no matter who they come from.
And Wexner traditionally has given money to mainly more Republicans than Democrats, but he's given money to Democrats.
And his wife also gives more money to Democrats.
And back in the day, Celeste. But as this goes through, it is taking down royal families. It is affecting the White House and the Prime Minister of Britain. That's part of the reason that, if you're a politician, you're going to give this money away. It's just not worth going through the heartache of what this is about.
So some politicians view it as a distraction or a problem, and they would sooner donate it. But
when you think about it, the Prime Minister of Great Britain could be ousted because of a third degree of separation.
That's exactly right. It was his chief of staff who was somehow connected to the former Prince Andrew, who was somehow connected to Epstein.
But we know Les Wexner and Jeffrey Epstein were friends for a couple of decades.
Yes.
But yet we're still being very cautious in this
process. There's no denying that it was really dumb to hang out with Jeffrey Epstein. There's just no good common sense reason to do it. The question is, was a law broken, and where's the evidence that the law was broken? And to date, I've seen nothing.
The cloud over the university, we saw it with the confrontation between a camera person and an assistant professor, basically asking questions about this. Jake, do you think the university would want the cloud removed and move on from this?
No, I don't think anyone wants to be under the cloud of Les Wexner. And I would slightly disagree with Mark. There is a question of has a law been broken, but there is another question of whether or not a law has been broken. What is a person with good judgment and good morals doing around Les Wexner? I mean, just there's
around Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes, or I'm sorry, around Jeffrey Epstein, or yeah. or around Les Wexner, around anyone who has been in this person's orbit, who has been repeatedly accused of enabling his behavior, who managed his money. The New York Times put out a very comprehensive report 6 weeks ago that traced a lot of how Jeffrey Epstein climbed through the ranks back to Les Wexner. I think a reasonable person can take a look at the facts and say whether or not, you know, we have very high standards of evidence in this country to put people away and lock them up for life. That's a good thing. But you don't need to follow the laws of evidence to make a good moral judgment.
And tagging onto that, we have a president of the United States who was very close to the same man.
Yeah, but enough about Bill Clinton. Remember, the recent Epstein files have showed that Trump spoke to the FBI 20 years ago and said, there's something wrong with this guy. You should look at him. We've got no such report to the FBI from Bill Clinton. Having said that, his orbit is big and it includes Republicans and Democrats. Yeah.
There is more going on in Ohio politics than Wexner's ties to Jeffrey Epstein. We'll look at the brewing fights between cities and immigration agents and liberals having second thoughts about legalizing marijuana. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
It's Haitian immigrants in Ohio remain in a state of limbo. A judge has extended their legal status while a court case continues. Immigration officials told the court they did plan enforcement actions had that temporary protected status expired earlier this month. Governor DeWine says he has gotten assurances that federal authorities will give him 24 hours notice of any increased enforcement activity. Meanwhile, at the State House, there are proposals to require local agencies cooperate with immigration agents, and activists urge local judges to ban ICE arrests inside Franklin County Municipal Courthouse rooms and hallways. Brian Rutherford, how much should local agencies be cooperating with immigration officials right now?
If there were a crime and they are required to, they should. But I think in this instance, there's so many other factors that go into this, and it is not the same as some of the other types of immigration issues that have happened. You're sending people back into harm's way into a country that quite frankly, Governor DeWine's an expert on and knows how dangerous it is. You have children that are actually American citizens and their parents of these children. You have driver's licenses being, canceled out so that people can be just stopped in their car and taken when this happens. There is a better way to do this. And, you know, I think if you look at most Americans, it's the way in which we do it and whether you're actually going after the criminal element first. And that's what's been lost.
Let's go back to the question you asked, which is whether or not locals should cooperate with federals. Let me give you a different example. The Internet Crimes Against Children is an FBI unit that goes after people who have child porn. It's federal law enforcement, just like ICE is. And now imagine a local courthouse knows that there is someone in that courthouse who has a computer holding on to child porn. And here comes the FBI to go arrest that person. Under this theory of we're not going to cooperate because we're a sanctuary against people who have child sex abuse materials or child porn on their computer. Federal law enforcement gets to enforce federal law.
Wouldn't those folks have to have a warrant, though?
Well, it depends on where you're going. If it's an arrest warrant or a search warrant, those are two different things. Mm-hmm. But certainly if the people running the courthouse know that, yes, that person works here and that computer needs to be looked at, whether it's a warrant or not, we should be cooperating. So, people who have a different view on the policy, and I hear you on the policy, you go to Congress to change policy. You don't ask frontline law enforcement officers to change the policy.
So here's the other perspective from a judge. A judge will tell you, I have a client who is waiting to go to trial against somebody that committed a crime against me.
A judge?
A judge. I have a judge or I have a client, whatever it is, if you're a prosecutor. And then ICE comes in and arrests that person and they never get their chance in court. And that has happened.
But they're supposed to be in another country. The advantage to having people be arrested in the courthouse is we don't have danger in the courthouse because everyone is screened before you come in for guns and for weapons. And so by saying we're not going to allow these apprehensions to happen in a safe place, that forces federal law enforcement to do it in places where there are people who do
so
have
Jake,
guns and rocks and knives.
Lawmakers are trying to require local agencies to cooperate. They're trying to require hospitals to cooperate with ICE and immigration officials. Doesn't that violate the home rule? How do they get around that, the home rule provision in the Constitution?
I think you would actually need a lawyer to unspool. I mean, you have federal law enforcement agencies. You have cities trying to pull one way. You have a state house trying to pull another way. I could not possibly even begin to unspool that. But I think that's almost telling in just how chaotic this has all been. You have three parties pulling in different directions. I should wear masks. I should not wear masks. You have people who, whether we like the policy or not, have been granted TPS, have been given some degree of legal certainty to be in this country. You get signals that this policy is going to end. You have a federal law enforcement agency that's saying, we might come in, we might not come in. You have litigation on this being ping-ponged around between different levels. Nobody knows anything of what's going to happen, and people are living in fear.
I mean, you're close to police agencies. You work with the FOP. Well, how do local police officers, sheriffs, deputies, how do they feel about this? Do they want to get involved in this?
I talk to them every day, and they are appalled that there's not cooperation, that their political leaders at the city level typically are telling them not to back up the federal law enforcement. The worst video we saw, among the worst, was the ICE agent who had been beaten with rocks by a crowd who's on his cell phone calling 911 in Minneapolis saying, where's the local police? Anybody who's been beaten by a crowd with rocks should be able to call 911 and get backup. And cops are frankly offended that they shouldn't be able to go back up anybody, much less a federal law enforcement officer.
Except for somebody who's being tackled by ICE. Apparently they can't call 911.
Sure they can. But first of all, if they're being apprehended
by... They don't respond.
Apprehending somebody who's violated the law is what law enforcement officers do every day. A domestic abuser who's running away from the scene, here's what the cops do. They tackle him, they put him into custody, and we sort this out in court. And that's where things should be sorted out.
But I will say, in the case of the judges, in fairness to them, they're trying to run a courtroom, they're trying to give people that have had crimes committed against them their day in court, and somebody comes in and takes
them. Not in the courtroom. None of this is happening in the courtroom.
But
it's
they
the
never
hallways
get to the,
of the courthouse.
Yeah, and they never get to the court.
That's because
right,
they're not
the
entitled to be in this country.
But they were entitled and were here and committed a crime. So why can't the justice system work for
Because there's two laws at risk. One is the law they're in court about and the law that they're supposed to be in another country.
So I don't
get
the
federal government,
so I
per
don't
our
get,
Congress, Democrats and Republicans said, if you come here illegally, it's a crime and you can be either prosecuted or deported.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying you should have your day in court if you've been... The crime has been committed
against you. Let's get to the next topic. Ohio's relationship with legal marijuana is about a year and a half old, and it is complicated. For lawmakers, the relationship was forced upon them when voters legalized recreational marijuana. After more than a year of debate, they recently changed that law, tightening restrictions, banning Ohioans from seeing other people to get high by banning intoxicating hemp and THC drinks. Hemp producers and sellers are trying to repeal that law, but the marijuana industry is campaigning against the repeal. Nationally, some big supporters of legalization may be having second thoughts. The New York Times, for example, this week urged tighter restrictions in an editorial titled, "It is time for America to admit it has a marijuana problem." Mark Weaver, the campaign to legalize marijuana was called "Treat It Like Alcohol." Alcohol has its share of problems, of course. We all know them. Should it be any surprise that if we're going to treat marijuana like alcohol, that marijuana is going to have problems?
A lot of problems, and in some cases worse than alcohol. Certainly what it does to the brain, we now have evidence. And those people who smoked pot 40 years ago will say it was no big deal. THC of today is, by some tapes, 100-fold more powerful. And the notion of going to big cities and smelling marijuana, the smell of failure, everywhere you go. When I was in New York City last year, my wife and I stepped out of the train station and immediately you smell marijuana. Nobody wants that in Ohio. The law that's in place now that should stay in place would require people, if they want to smoke pot, to smoke it in their private home. But what a shock that the New York Times has admitted that they were way too out there suggesting pay no attention to marijuana. It's harmless.
Is this any different, Brian, than sports betting? People say, well, it's just going to break it above board, and the same people who are betting sort of with their bookie are just going to bet online, but no, it exploded. And marijuana use has really
increased a lot. Both of them have societal issues, and we're in this era where people have decided it, and it's going to grow, and we're going to have to sort of constrain it or get our hands on it. I've said before, and I think President Trump actually finally changed the schedule of it, because one of the problems in the marijuana industry actually is cash-only business, which causes other kinds of graft and corruption that can happen. So we'll see what happens with that. But you're also getting into the era of big marijuana against hemp sales, and so you're sort of dealing with those little brush fires.
The state has received $180 million in marijuana sales and excise taxes, Jake, since it was made legal. That's a lot of money. It's not a huge amount of money, but that's a lot of money still.
It is a lot of money, and there's kind of a freedom issue underpinning all of it. Should an adult have the right to, you know, destroy their lungs, smell like failure, whatever you want to call it, bet on sports? I think the interesting thing the New York Times was getting into in that editorial was that maybe we need to look at some of the corporate behavior here, some of the marketing, some of the potency of these products. And to my knowledge, that's not being addressed in any of these bills, in Senate Bill 56, really at all. And moreover, that's not really the focus. The Attorney General Dave Yost just filed an interesting price-fixing lawsuit against, I believe, 9 marijuana companies. That's the most aggressive action I've seen on the corporate side. But I'm just curious, the bulk of Senate Bill 56 on marijuana is things like keeping it stored in your trunk and not bringing it in from Michigan, which is actually a move that protects the industry more than anything.
Ah, the big marijuana industry. There is money in legal marijuana. Who knew? So it's going to remain legal in Ohio for a long time to come. My guess is that regulations will tighten up a bit. Maybe Ohio will even impose state minimum pricing for marijuana, like it has for alcohol. It is designed to keep people from drinking too much, but it also protects the profits of beer and wine and booze makers and sellers. So what's good for booze should be good for marijuana. Look for state minimum pricing to come to a dispensary near you soon. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. As we discussed, the House Oversight Committee questioned Les Wexner this week in New Albany. We could give the award to Wexner for making them move the deposition from Washington to his home turf. But instead, let's give it to the committee members who were not there. There are 46 members of that committee. 5 showed up for the Wexner deposition. All were Democrats. And notably, all were from outside Ohio. Ohio Republicans Jim Jordan and Mike Turner and Democrat Chantel Brown, they sit on the committee, but they decided not to make the relatively short drive to central Ohio from their districts. Congress was not in session on those days. Brown said she had a scheduling conflict. No word on what kept Mike Turner and Jim Jordan from attending. What their absence did mean is they did not have to confront one of Ohio's most prominent citizens in a congressional hearing, or deposition in this case, and they did not have to answer reporters' questions after the session was over. For that, Reps Jordan, Turner, and Brown get our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and tell your friends about us. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.